Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
They had been close, right, Jeff, in the first four or five games, and then they begin to drift away in terms of the next two or three. They've been out by a lot, so that's good.
And Jeff, they certainly played two bad games. But again, that's like what this whole thing is about. It's about like betting where people don't want to bet. I mean, who in their right mind would want to take the San Francisco 49ers right now?
Yeah, I was going to say, when Jeff said if the betting affects your enjoyment of the game, you shouldn't be betting, I would also say, tongue-in-cheek, if you're betting Cardinals Niners, you probably shouldn't be betting.
This is General George Washington, and you're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
But sadly, you're not going to hear Tony today. Tony Kornheiser not in today. This is Mark Stern. You might know me by a number of different aliases, but this is Mark Stern. And I'm here with basically the full crew today. Actually, the full crew. Michael Kornheiser here, Jeannie McManus, Gary Braun, and a very esteemed guest, a good friend and one of the funniest men on the planet, Adam Ferraro, who is here this week through Saturday night at the DC Improv.
Yes. Thank you for having
me. On Connecticut Avenue, yeah?
Yes, Connecticut Avenue, mm-hmm. Yes. You've been gracious enough to give me some stage time.
Yes, so you're going to come and open for me again.
Yes.
It wouldn't be a D.C. trip without that happening.
Sure.
So is this like quid pro quo? Hmm?
Yes, I was like, well, I feel like I got to do something.
I just wanted to see the next location. I mean, I came from the radio station to the undisclosed country club.
Right.
That's right.
I know, now this is the third version.
To now to the money pit with French fries.
Moving on up, though, aren't we?
Yeah.
This is the nicest
this is
yet,
nice.
Wouldn't you
this
agree?
This is the nicest one.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you've been doing the rounds, and I want to talk to you because I know you had not the best of flights out here.
Yeah, yeah.
But I know this is the Tony Kornheiser show, and I know if he were here, I know what we'd be talking about, even though I know he wouldn't have stayed up for the end of it, was the end of the World Series last night, which was anticlimactic in a lot of ways. Did you guys, who here watched the game?
I watched two innings, and I just said,
I landed in, like, the third and the fourth, and I put it on, and then I'm like, yeah, I'm going to bed.
At the risk of putting myself under tremendous pressure, I went the distance.
So you watched the whole thing?
Yeah. I mean, it was on, and I was there. I mean, I was kind of doing some other stuff. It did not really hold your attention much after
Gary,
those first couple of innings.
Gary, you had Houston.
Yeah, you
doubled down with Houston.
Yeah.
You started out.
I did have Houston. Yeah.
It started out great. I mean, it's a lot like marriage. Starts out great.
By game seven.
Got that extra inning, honey. Boy, I don't know where you found that move.
So, yeah, I mean, and Houston's the better story to win, right? I mean, everybody.
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, I have, like, when I was a kid, I liked the Dodgers, so I was sort of pulling for the Dodgers, and I like Koufax, and I like Hershiser, and I like
that. Koufax, was anyone watching when Koufax threw out the first pitch?
No, I came to it late, so I missed that.
Let me say something about Koufax.
Sure.
He looks fantastic.
He looks great. Mm-hmm.
Did he
fire one in there?
I mean, he wasn't
faster
hitting
than
the gun
pitch.
At 90 or
wasn't
anything.
A lot of movement.
But for an 81-year-old, he threw the ball well, but that's what I was going to say, was he looked tremendous. I mean, super fit.
Yeah.
And just still getting it done.
Yeah. They needed him last night. They needed somebody other than
Hugh Darvish.
He's 81.
He throws out the first pitch?
Yeah. And actually,
my mother's 75. She can't drive at night.
Well, the guy who threw it out with him, and they were throwing to Garvey and Rick Monday, respectively, and now I'm at a loss. I forget who it was, but was 91.
Garvey.
No, the guy who threw out, they threw out two first pitches. So it was Koufax and another guy who was
He's got a big head. You see in L.A., he's on after the shows, and he sits and he does the post game.
Sandy does?
No,
or Garvey. Yeah, he's got
a big
head.
Bobblehead.
Which is good for TV, right?
Yeah.
By the way, Garvey's career got totally derailed at the end because they found out that he was sleeping around everywhere.
Oh, the humanity!
Right, and now it seems so quaint. It's like, oh, who cares now? You
That's
know.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But that was the biggest crime against Steve Garvey back in the day. So the Astros win. Michael, did you watch the game?
I did. I had to take a 30-minute break for bath time in the middle, but the game already felt like it was over at that time.
Well, it worked because you smelled great,
baby boy. Thank you. Every other week.
What did you make of the game?
Every game has been so different in the series. You had the home runs, you had the pitchers who can't get out of the second inning, and last night it just felt so, as you said, anticlimactic, but just so odd. McCullers is hitting basically other batter.
Yeah.
I don't know how he gets through those first two innings without allowing a run and actually drives in a run himself.
Well, he said in the post-game interview, he essentially said, yeah, I had nothing. I told Skip going in, I got nothing. I'll give you what I can. I'll give you what I can do. But he was least surprised of anyone that he couldn't.
You're our guy.
Who says that?
Yeah.
You had Kershaw before the game saying he could go 27 innings and looked like maybe he could have.
Boy, that's the real second guess move right there. Is because you Darvish just
didn't
have
work
it.
Out for you,
no.
Darvish.
No,
one batter too late.
Yeah, and you just knew from the get go that he just didn't have it. And when Kershaw came in, Now, granted, he sort of threw up on himself the other night, but when he came in, he shut him down. And, I mean, if the Dodgers had been able to capitalize on one of 1 million opportunities they had to drive in runs early, it might have been a different game.
They stranded six when I fell asleep.
Yeah, they stranded way more than that.
They had so many guys on, and Jock Peterson came up in the first inning with the bases loaded, and I was like, it's going to be this kid's night because he had the big night the night before. And he's smiling when he comes up, clearly feeling no pressure. And, you know, and they ground it out, and that was it. You know, you felt at that point that it was, like, not going to be the Dodgers' night. So, I mean, and congratulations to the Astros.
Yes.
For everything that went on in Houston with the hurricane and just everything that they've dealt with, you got to feel good for those guys. Yeah. And then I guess Correa proposed to
him. He proposed
girl.
To him.
Yes.
Yeah, on the field.
Very Boise State.
Yeah. So, and she said yes, which is nice. So
you can't say no in that situation.
Right, you say that afterwards. You're like, don't
we'll
ever put
talk
me down.
About this in the car. Exactly. We will talk about this in the car.
Sure, I'll do it. Fine.
It wasn't up to the excitement level of the other games for sure. And I, for one, was happy about that because it delivered us from having to have the greatest World Series ever conversation.
I mean,
you can't have that with
the immediate overreaction. This is the greatest thing you've ever seen or will ever
see. And it was a great series.
It was a great series.
Very exciting series.
Yeah. And I think I looked at the early odds. I think the Dodgers are the odds on favorite to win next year. I think we're like 5-1. And the Nats, I think, are 7-1. Do we?
God,
I'm not ready to talk about this.
You know, along the lines of the show open today, who is running to the window today to get in the futures for next year's World Series champion?
People that are betting on the San Francisco
Yikes.
Game. Yeah. So anyway, that is that, and baseball is now done. And I won't even get. I don't think anybody watched the Wizards blow a 22-point lead last night.
Spike was watching that in my house, very frustratedly, yelling at the television.
Yeah,
the Wiz. It's the same deal. We talk about this every year. You have to play defense to win in the NBA, certainly to win down the stretch. I mean, you can win track meet to the regular season.
This is another huge. Didn't they blow a huge lead against Golden State?
And given up, I think in that case it was a 14-point, maybe fourth quarter lead. In this case, giving up 122 to a Phoenix team. It's just, you know, and the frustrating thing, I say this as a fan. I guess, Gene, you're a fan of the Wizards, right? To the extent you're
in
an NBA fan?
In about February, I'll start watching right now.
I'm
watching terrible movies on Netflix.
Yeah, I was going to say, what is your like beacon of light right now? Because the Skins aren't doing it for you, obviously. Is there anything out there in the sports world?
We just finished this series on Netflix, Wanted, about these two Australian babes. It's like a Thelma and Louise, Australian style, which was kind of good.
And then you watched The Kingsman. You told me that earlier.
We watched The Kingsman
last
night.
I liked The Kingsman. The
it
original
was
Kingsman?
Horrible.
I saw it on the plane.
What's horrible? What's horrible?
That's what you meant, Gary, right?
I got nothing. All right, let's shoot it.
I liked The Kingsman, but I will say, and you probably have some shtick on this.
What is that?
I saw it on a plane, so it's like that changes everything when you watch a movie. You know what I mean? It's like something that you would watch on a plane and commit to at home, you would flip right past. But
I mean, I saw Colin Firth, and I thought, okay, distinguished actor.
King Speech. Right. Yeah.
I'm sorry, Samuel L. Jackson.
What's in your wallet?
Not so much, right? Don't you think? A little overexposed these days. I don't know.
Hey, he's got a mortgage, too. Come on.
Must have eight of them with all the jobs he takes.
Speaking of being on an airplane watching movies, that's a professional segue.
By the way, Nige, I'm sorry to interrupt your segue. I just looked up the odds. The Nats, shockingly, 7 teams. Well, they're tied with the Bo Sox, what I'm seeing, at 10-1.
Oh, then that's...
Indians, Yankees, 15-2, along with the Cubs. Astros, 7-1, and Dodgers, 11-2. So you have the Dodgers, Cubs... Dodgers and Cubs both ahead of them in the NL.
I did not see. The one I saw was...
No. The Caravan has moved on, okay?
The Westgate.
We can't talk 2018
no,
MLB futures?
Cannot.
The Westgate had the Dodgers opening at 5-1, so there you go.
Okay.
I don't know.
Well, 5-1, 11-2 is very close.
Yes,
by my
and the Nationals at 7-1, so...
All right. Well, go to bookmaker.eu if you want him at 10-1. There's more value
there. Or just call Kip Sheeman. I'm sure he can find a guy.
He'll book
for
it for you.
You.
Well, shoot, Adam probably knows five guys that will book a bet for you.
Not as far as you know. I was the last guy and I quit gambling. Just not.
Okay. And, yes, sir.
But I was.
You say so.
I believe you said that.
I still had
is your wife listening?
I still had a bookie. So I call up.
Once in a while.
Give me the Jets and the Oval. He's like, all right, it's 3.5. I go, I got a 3. He goes, no, it's 3.5. He goes, I go, are you shaving points? That's our policy. What? You're a criminal. What policy? He's like, what are you doing? He's like, well, you know, I don't have any health care. My back's been hurting. I'll buy you a tube of Bengay. Give me the Jets in the Vegas line, Pete. And he goes, don't use my name on an open line. Pete. Yeah, because I didn't have a number. I just, you know, like usually.
You got a guy.
Yeah, this was before you had to have a number and it was a thing. And
yeah, like you're meeting him out back at 7-Eleven on Wednesday to settle up.
Are you laying? I thought you were taken. Oh, that's why you had it ready. You know, that kind of.
Right. Got to read it back. That's key. Kids today don't know about placing a bet on the phone.
No, you don't know. It's all internet. What do you know about buying a hook, you little bastard? Exactly.
So you just flew in from L.A. last night, right?
Yes. That's why I missed half the game.
And
I was telling you off the air, it was a germ lady.
Yeah, the germ lady.
I got this germ. There's a coffin lady. First of all, every flight is packed. I don't know. You fly a lot, Kevin.
Yeah, a little bit.
You don't fly. You swim.
Not so much.
You swim.
I prefer to swim.
Do you have your own? Yeah, because that's nice. Go into a pool with other people's germs.
Yeah, no germs there. Not a
no,
bit.
You're sure. No.
Adam crushing McManus before the show, saying, I don't know, you got a driver's license. Why are you swimming?
I can't go. I swim. I walk.
Swam 2 miles this morning. Yeah,
we want Jeannie to come to the show tonight.
I was like, is that how you got here? You got to swim across.
Jeannie, are you sure you don't want to come tonight?
Can we she wants to come.
I want to come, but I swam 2 miles this morning. I got up really early. I would be asleep. Well,
first
of all, Nigel will not let me come.
No, no, no. This is an open invite.
Because
no.
He says he works
too blue.
Too blue
he
for
works
me.
Blue.
I just want to say, I've been in the Phillies clubhouse. Okay.
Yeah.
I've been in the locker room.
You've been
room
on a Steve Sands text thread.
Exactly.
Yeah, you've heard it all.
I could handle it, but you know, I don't want to intimidate him in
any
way.
I understand.
Now, you don't care. Absolutely.
Now, I'll say this about Nigel's act, and I mean this from the bottom of my heart. Last time you were in town, mm-hmm. Michael and I went to see you.
Yes.
Nigel, did you open for that or MC it?
I did. I wasn't the MC. I came on after the MC.
Okay, because I honestly did not recall. So right. That's what I would say. Oh, no, now I do remember, because you did the Mike Pence.
He did the Russia bit.
Kane bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember
It was
that.
A little political last year. My act has changed significantly from when I first started. And we'll talk about that because I've also
that explains the
you do voices. I heard you do an English guy now. I'm interested to hear it.
I'm working on it. I'm here. The whole act is Sean Connery tonight. I'm excited about that. Mm-hmm. Well, it's good to have you in town, man.
Nice to be back.
People are like, when are you doing stand up again, Stern? When are you doing stand up again? I'm like, I gotta wait till Adam comes back.
You're in. You're in tonight.
What's up? So I'm very excited.
And you're in
to be
Saturday night too. You can do a spot.
We derailed you on your germ lady.
I was just saying, we flew in. And it was every flight is packed now. And there was a lady behind me who was coughing, but like loud, you know, like, bleh, and I'm like,
ooh.
Yeah, like that. I thought a bird flew into one of the jets, and she's behind me. So I put the air thing on, and it's not, I'm like, get away from me, pathogen fountain. And it's not moving quick enough, so I'm like fanning it. Then I realize it's recycled air. I'm like, oh God, it's coming back. And we were talking before, people take their shoes off.
Oh, shoes and socks off on
this
a plane.
This isn't a flying living room. There's other people here. Right.
Did
Who
the person
that?
In front of you
the
put worst. Their seat back and push
Yeah,
your
you
seat
get.
Back?
Well, I get the extra leg bulkhead.
That's aggravating, but it's allowed. I mean,
yeah,
the seat
that
reclines.
You can do. Yeah, that's. But the other one is a choice. You're going to choose to be an animal, you know. And the people that fly with the animals, they're not even in car. There's a guy. There was an enormous man with a dog just on his shoulder. I'm like, that's
on your plane?
Yes. I'm like, that's your lunch. You're going to eat this animal. That's the only explanation. What? This isn't an ark. What are you traveling? Two of every kind?
Did they serve a meal?
They gave you... No, this is a weird thing. This was, they gave you stuff to pick up before the flight. Like, there was like a little thing that you could pick up popcorn and stuff before the flight.
Uh-huh.
And then I think I was sleeping, but I think they came by with the drink cart. Yeah, and the coughing lady behind me with the drink cart, she's chewing ice behind me. I finally fall asleep. I'm dreaming about Nazis marching into France. I was like, I got to get my own plane.
God, you remember when you used to take the back row of that flight and just lay across it and go to sleep?
Why am I spending money on first class? You put the arms up, your pants out. No.
Get on one of those red eyes. You could sleep the whole
way. They won't even take off now until they've dragged two people off. It's like, you know, if we didn't overbook it by five, we're not going.
It's a flying bus now.
Yeah, it really
it's crazy.
Is.
And
it
they
is.
Charge you for everything. You used to be able to get blankets and stuff. And
no, you get nothing now.
Now.
Like, you want extra air?
Yeah.
We can get that.
Oh, you didn't say you wanted to land. We just circled D.C. You want to jump, we'll open a door.
The first time I flew to Europe, the plane I was on had two levels, and there was a cocktail lounge.
Oh, and the little circular stick and the Goldfinger jet up top.
There was a man.
I think you're talking about the old school 747.
747, yeah.
There was a man playing the piano.
Yeah.
We just went up there the whole way over.
By the way, everyone smoking throughout the plane, right?
Yeah. Well, the greatest thing in the world was, and I think smoking was outlawed pretty much before you were flying, Michael, but you would get on a flight and like seat 10 would be non-smoking, seat 11 was smoking.
Yeah. That's right. The old dice bit.
Yeah, the guy would look behind you and you're like, it's the rules, man. Sorry, I'm just playing by the rules.
I never got the smoking thing. That was gone by the time I started flying.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so there was no smoking on the plane. I never got that.
But. Yeah, I've smoked on. Yeah, I remember. I'm old enough to back when I smoked cigarettes back 1,000 years ago. But well, I'm glad that you got in when hopefully you didn't get Ebola from the germ lady.
Oh, and now I'm freaking out, too, because I'm like, God, what did I catch?
Yeah. Right. Where was she coming from?
Yeah.
Where had she been?
Is this a connecting flight from where?
Ew. Right.
You know, I'm like, oh, God. So, yeah, and you said you were on a flight coming home from Uzbekistan or
Kazakhstan. Easy. The Uzbeks not in favor right now.
Excuse me.
Southern border of Kazakhstan. Yeah, that had originated, let me just say, in a Southeast Asian country.
In a third world country.
In a developing nation at best. And it was, there was not, we just have a different, you know, I got a little bit of a bubble around me. I mean, even as we sit here at this table, you're both a little bit close as far as I'm concerned.
Am I in the crease?
But yeah, she was, there was like no, at one point I got up for a bathroom break and there was there was plenty of room and the person waiting behind me was literally touching me. And it's just like, yo, bro, you know, can we get a little bit of
space? I didn't
totally
have a lot of space on the other side. That's why.
I will tell you this: on that same plane, I kid you not, you talk about, you know, it being a flying bus. They have, you know, all the rules, the no smoking, and it's all sort of icons, and then under it, written in like six different languages. They have it. I forget. It might have been Turkish Airways. I was flying, and they had one of the rules was no laying down in the aisles.
Well, that's a good
no
rule.
Laying down in the aisle.
Right. Like you're not allowed to get a pillow and a blanket and just lay in the aisle and sleep.
So at least
thanks
one,
for clarifying
one
that.
Time.
One time.
Theoretically.
Yeah. Something prompted that.
A bunch of people that look like Jonestown after the Kool-Aid.
Theoretically.
We got to make a rule. We can't have these people lying in the room. Oh.
That's like when you see that sign that says no spitting in the water fountain. You're like, oh, God, what preceded, precipitated
there
this?
There was a cause of someone going, hey, we got to have a meeting. I don't know what that is floating. Somebody get a pen.
Well, don't you tell the story about the first time you went to NASCAR? The sign, sign on the fence?
They asked me to start a NASCAR. I waved the flag at a NASCAR race, and then they gave me and my wife seats and right on turn one, the chain link fence. And there was a sign that said, don't throw chicken wings on track. So you know, at least one time.
Right.
There's people up in the stands like,
I got an idea.
You shouldn't know how to do that.
I don't see no sign.
So great. All right, we'll take a quick break. We do have one commercial today, believe it or not. Somebody's actually sponsoring the show when I'm hosting.
That's bad money.
We're excited about that. And then I want to talk to you. You were just in a movie. I want to talk to you about the movie. And I want to share with these guys, because I don't think Jeannie's ever heard the story me tell of bombing as badly as I did that one time. That Saliza loves that story so much.
No, I was there when you told that story.
Oh, were you there in that story?
I think Saliza and I were in the room.
Gary, have you heard the story?
No, I think you're confusing Jeannie and I.
I have not heard that.
I find the story easy to believe already,
right.
But I have not heard the story.
And the greatest advice Adam gave me after I bombed, so I want to
your bombing is a great way to tease tonight's show.
It is, yeah, it is. Come to see me fail.
Listen to the marketing.
Adam and Mark, excuse me, both performing DC Improv tonight's show. Starts at 7:30. Doors open at 6:30.
Yeah.
Tickets were still available as of yesterday. I'm not sure.
Yes, I believe at DCImprov.com.
And so Michael and I will be there.
Michael and maybe Jeannie, if we can wake her up.
We're trying. It doesn't seem like
no,
it.
It's
just parking the bus.
What if you swim there? Would you come that way?
No, because, well,
I swim, we'll dry you off.
I'll just, whatever. I'd be asleep. I mean, hate to sound like Mr. Tony, but like I'd be asleep by
Adam,
8:00.
There's a lady here. She's wet. I don't know if we can.
She's never heard that at your show.
She's in a black Speedo.
She's in a black Speedo.
Right.
And she smells like chlorine.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show. Mark Stern filling in for Tony, and we'll be right back.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
They say in life there are no guarantees. They say there's no sure thing. Well, I'm here to tell you, there might just be one exception. In 1924, Husky started making things for people who make things, and they did it with common sense. That meant adding function, never frills. and making tools that stood the test of time. 93 years later, older than I am, Husky is still making quality crafted, durable tools. And Husky stands by their hand tools for life, so they give their hand tools a lifetime warranty, like the Husky Ratchet, with a 100-position ratcheting design and a 10% longer handle than standard ratchets to do what other ratchets can't, or the virtually unbreakable Husky flashlight, with the ability to withstand a 30-foot drop and work in up to 1 meter of water submersion, both guaranteed for a lifetime, but built so you won't need it. Now, that's a pretty sure thing. And to Husky, that's common sense. Husky, common sense tools since 1924, with hand tools guaranteed for a lifetime, and they are found only at the Home Depot.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Welcome back to the Tony Kornheiser Show. Mark Stern in for Tony. I'm not going to say that anymore because it's a podcast. It's not a radio show. So I don't have to say that all the time. But Adam Ferrara is here. It's very exciting. And this, by the way, is Jim Viner in the incredible B3 band. The song is called Cutlass Supreme.
Ah. Mm. Yes. For your Oldsmobiles fan.
You like cars, don't you?
Yes, I do. From the album 442.
My first car was an Olds Cutlass.
You had an Olds Cutlass? You had a 442?
No, it wasn't that cool. That's what I wanted.
Yeah, yeah.
I had like a newer model Cutlass, the Pastel Princess, we affectionately dubbed it, because it was like, I forget what they called it, but it was like a baby blue.
Big.
Tudor. It's funny. I mean, I think it was it's funny to say now.
Yeah.
I think it was a 78 Cutlass, which sounds really cool. But when I started driving, it was just an 8-year-old car.
My daily driver is a 70 deuce and a quarter. I got a little Buick 225. Now I painted it black cherry metallic. I dropped the suspension. I smoked out the windows, and I drive around Santa Monica. I play Parliament Funkadelic. I scare white people. That's what I do. Flashlight. Harold, there's that car again. I think he lives here.
I think the first car that I learned to drive on, my dad was a Volvo guy.
Mm-hmm.
So we had like a 1965 Volvo wagon, the same car that drove me home from the hospital when I was born. And this is the first car that I learned on. And the steering wheel was the size, I mean, it was just enormous. And
Did you have flags on like an African dictator driving around?
I should have. But you sat really low in it, mm-hmm. and I'm a short guy anyway, so all you could see was like the very top of my head while I was driving. People
well,
would see
you were just
me,
like
born.
Larry King at the baseball game.
How big were you?
Yeah, exactly.
Like Larry King at the baseball
game. Did you see him back there? Yeah. Oh my God.
My first
he was getting
car
smaller by the pitch.
That I drove was a 1957 Chevrolet station wagon, three on the column.
That three on a tree.
Three on the tree.
Was it a handyman or was it a Nomad? Did it have?
No, it was not a Nomad.
I know visually what that means, but so how did that function? Is that a clutch or is that like a
clutch?
One is down, one is in down.
So drive, reverse, park?
It's like an H.
It's stick shift. It's called three on a tree. It's three speeds, three forward speeds in reverse.
So one,
on the column.
Yeah. Right. I've seen
step
those.
Down, up, second here.
That's
third
awesome,
is down,
McManus.
And in reverse is out and back.
When you said, what is it, Nomad or Handyman?
Yeah, Nomad.
What does that mean?
Chevy Nomad. One of them has chrome on the tailgate. I think that's the Nomad has the chrome on the tailgate.
I don't think we had chrome on the tailgate.
And the Handyman doesn't. And it was a great car.
The Handyman was the name of a car?
That Handyman and Nomad, 1957.
Oh, there. I'm looking at pictures of them. That is positively prehistoric.
That's pimping. That was dropped and checked.
After you've driven that down a narrow DC street, you can drive anything. I mean, it's like driving the Queen Mary. You know, it's just so wild.
It's funny. I got a kid learning to drive now, and I think every morning as I drive up Connecticut, basically from the Beltway to like the country or to the Circle, I think I got to bring my kid up here because if you can do this with the narrow lanes, mm-hmm. you know, you can do anything. They still got those super narrow lanes. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Exactly.
That stretch of road.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone who learned to drive here.
I mean, the turning radius of that is Connecticut. That's what you need to turn that car
and
around.
And no power
Come
steering.
Around.
No power. No power. Anything. No power
no,
steering.
No, there's no power. Nothing. No. My uncle Tony. Remember the betting?
Yeah. I think I was on air off. But yeah.
So anyway, he had an old Chevy with no power steering, and he had a suicide knob, and he was this little guy with no neck. And he would turn the wheel. The best when he saw someone that owed him money. He's like, oh, there's that son of... Nah.
Yeah.
Just keep spinning the wheel.
Yeah, so more
of a visual joke,
right.
But still very funny.
He looked like the Karate Kid. Just wax on. It's been a week.
That's so hard to segue from that. That's great. So we're doing the show tonight.
Yes.
Actually, before we even get into that, you were in a movie. I want to talk to you about the movie. It's called Little Italy,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it was called Little Italy. We just wrapped it. We were in. And I have a question for Michael about food, because you're a food guy.
Yes, he is a food guy.
Is there a rule for fusion food? Is there a rule like you can't? Because I'll tell you the story. We're shooting there, and there's very eclectic tastes in food. And when you're on a movie on location, you eat what's around. So they brought us stuff from the local restaurants, and this was Korean-Mexican.
That has to break some rule. I will defer to Ms. McManus as the food expert.
It broke me below the 39th yeah. parallel. There's a reason those countries are separated by an ocean. And I think it was North Korea because I passed a missile. There's no nice way of saying that. But what is there a rule that the fusion, do you look for an ingredient? Is it there's something that puts two things together? Or is it like Miles Davis, I play what I want?
I think you just try and balance flavors, right, Gene? I mean, you want to try and get maybe a spicy with a sweet. Mm-hmm. And in general, the fusion just scares me because it's usually a restaurant that's just trying to really live out its 3 to 5 year span
right.
before people tire yes. of that fusion flavor.
I always thought the genesis of fusion was like, you know, it's a Korean joint. It's like, oh, we got an extra jalapeno. All right, it's Korean
yeah,
Mexican
fusion,
now. You know,
it's like what's just, left over.
Right, exactly.
We had this. It's like going to go bad. Right. Eat it. It's going to go bad. It's like my mother. You want it? I'm going to throw it out.
Like fusion is a relatively new concept culinarily.
Yeah.
Right?
I'm the last step before the garbage can.
Yeah, I mean, there were some sort of elegant fusions, like there was a French-Asian fusion early on. Which
that
kind
that
of
I get.
That kind of makes sense.
They called that Vietnam.
Yeah, that's true. That was Vietnam.
Didn't end well.
No, it did not. But there's one restaurant downtown, I wish I could remember, but I think it's Chinese and Mexican.
Yeah.
And you're just like, no, there's too much going on here, yeah. you know?
Well, I didn't know if Michael, if you knew this, is like you can't put these two together or it rains or...
No, I don't know, and I'm sorry to admit this, I figured that was more of a DC restaurant, you know, thing over the last 10 years, but I didn't know that it was as big of a trend around.
Well, no, when I was in Toronto, it's all over. There's all kinds of, and they have different flags.
Well, yeah, very international city. Yeah, very international. Some cities sort of are more inviting to it, I guess, than others.
But I remember eating that going, I have many questions.
Yeah.
Braun family struggling mightily with where to eat before the show tonight.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't, you know, I know Daily Grill's right there.
Yeah. Daily Grill's right
no,
there.
No
Daily Grill, because you can get a Manhattan clam chowder, which is my favorite clam
yeah,
chowder.
Yeah, just not you're really
Manhattan
guy,
not a New England guy.
New England for days with the cream. Me, not so much. I like the Manhattan.
Interesting. So the movie was called Little Italy.
Little Italy. It's about it's pretty much Romeo and Juliet set with two warring pizza families.
Okay.
And I was Lord Capulet.
That prick Hayden Christensen is in it, is he?
Yes, he is.
Oh,
that's
my
Romeo.
God, no, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, he's in it. Emma Roberts like played my daughter. Andrea Martin played my mom.
Oh,
Danny Aiello was in it. It was great.
Oh, that's a fun cast.
Yeah, so it was a lot of fun. And
Andrea Martin, I don't think gets enough credit for being one of the funniest women ever.
She is very funny.
She was SCTV forever,
SCTV,
right?
SCTV. She's on. I think it's Great News now on NBC. And she, the Greek wedding movies, she's great.
Love
and a nice lady too.
So when's it come out?
I don't know. I think they said they might aim for Valentine's Day, but maybe.
Okay. I'm looking at here. Sure. It says in post production, but for 2018.
In theaters 2018.
2018.
Okay, right. 2018. I don't know. So anyway, but I had to ask that food question.
So you'll have to wait a year.
I was
for
sitting
the
there
Oscar.
Eating on the set. I'm going, this is not Blue Apron. I can't take shallots out of this.
Well,
this
now,
is all shallots. This
Tony,
is...
Tony's talked about this, and I've never been on a set.
What?
But apparently, it's just wall to wall food all day long. Is it just people
sitting
around?
The worst is writing. It's sitting around eating and waiting. That's what you do.
That's what it is?
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
See.
That's pretty much it. That's TV. It's film is worse, but that's TV. And writing was worse. I wrote on a sitcom for a while, and basically they put you in a room, and you're like a veal. They put you in a room, you don't see the sun, and they just feed you, and you just keep eating.
But
and
Adam, you've lost weight. You've lost weight since the last time I saw you.
Yeah,
what happened?
I worry a lot. I haven't been the same since the Korean Mexican.
Out there.
I worry. The thing that gets me is eating late at night because when I'm done working,
your life's
that's the worst.
It's like you if you're in an editing room.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's no time in those rooms.
Nothing. Just, but you got to eat. You know, so it's like
you don't know what time of day it is.
No,
you know,
it's like a casino.
No
there's
windows.
No clocks.
Right.
Yeah. You're on the and you're on the phone with the wife going when it's done.
Exactly.
Yeah. So when you're on crunch time, so eating late was my big thing. So I stopped trying to do that, and that surprisingly kind of helped me a lot.
Yeah, that's the worst time to eat, and it's the best time to eat. I mean, you're like, Yeah, because your workday's done.
Yeah, you're like, I'm so hungry. Let me just have, and I end up eating crap late. And then you're like, no, if I just.
We're going to do a show tonight. We're going to do two shows Saturday. You're coming down Saturday.
Yeah.
So we're going to do two shows. We're going to be done. So midnight, you still got post adrenaline. You're done with the.
Right.
And
you haven't eaten.
I haven't eaten.
Right.
Can you eat before a show?
I can't eat a lot because, you know, you just, your energy goes down. And you don't get, what are you going to have? A piece of spinach in your teeth? You know, you're burping on people. That's just. They're not coming.
It's a different kind of comedy.
Yeah. Dogs are funny.
That might smell. Sorry, front row.
I don't remember that.
That must be fusion.
Yeah, that was a fusion. So after that's when you would eat. And, you know, because that's when your adrenaline goes. Because, look, for me, you know, the booze is gone. The drugs are gone. I got the girl I want. So I'm eating. You know, that's all that's left. And now that's gone. So it's a lonely life.
What used to kill me at the Post, there was this Post cafeteria. You would see people. It was okay. Well, it depended on who was running it. You would see people go through at noon and get a sandwich, order a sandwich. I have a ham and a cheese. And they could put the raw onion on it. I'm like, you're doing that at noon?
Yeah.
What is happening around
your workspace?
When
you have to be around other people?
Yes.
God.
Never understood
that. At the radio station, we used to have a guy that would have fish chowder, and he would put it in the microwave and sit in there for 5 minutes, and for the rest of the week, it would smell
kitchen
like
fish.
Yeah. And we'd get angry. He'd be like, dude, you can't do that.
What are you doing?
He's like, I like this. This is my lunch. I'm like, yeah, but now we have to deal with the consequences.
We were shooting in Iceland. We were shooting Top Gear, and they fed us because they had a caterer, a guy in a truck following us across the glacier, sleeping. So there's a guy in a truck cooking lunch on a Coleman stove. And we pull up to the next location. It's curry and some kind of meat. The shape wasn't familiar.
Could be whale. Could be reindeer up there. You never know.
That's why curry was invented. Yeah, so you can cover
that. So they give us that. And then we're sleeping in a confined area. That's what you want. That's what you want.
Indeterminate meat and curry.
Yeah. Strange mystery meat. A rhombus. I'm eating a curry rhombus. That's the shape. A five-sided... And they put us all together in this little fishing shack, and the sounds that were coming out. I don't want to hear anything about your plane ride, Braun.
So how did acting, did you want to be an actor?
I started as a stand-up. I got out of college.
You've been doing comedy forever.
And I told my parents, well, we've done one of your things. And I went to Marist College in Poughkeepsie, and my father actually said.
Rick Smits, right?
Yeah, Rick Smits. Yeah. I went to
Flying
school
Dutchman.
With Rick. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And so my father said, he goes, you're going to go to college. He goes, why? He goes, because you can. He goes, everyone else's family.
Right.
They're where they need to be. You can't. So they sent me to college. I got out, and then I went to do stand-up. And it's like when you hit a golf ball right. You know when you hit it, you get the ping?
Oh, yeah.
Like, ping. I'm like, oh, this is where I need to be. I don't know how long it's going to last, but I'll learn whatever lessons I can here. And it's still a phase.
So completely post-college.
Got out of college, went on a stage. I was in a band in college.
Okay.
So I was performing in college. We weren't any good. We were terrible. You know, we were a bar band.
What was the name of the band?
Verbal warning, because that was the warning you got. First you get a verbal warning, then a written warning. And we got them all. We bricked the RA in our room. We got drunk one night.
Built a brick wall.
We cask of Amontillado them. Because I could mix cement.
A wrong is underdressed.
Yeah, just sitting like this. So, yeah, we got all kinds of trouble.
So how did the acting come from that?
I did stand-up, and then I flew out to L.A. I got very fortunate because I started working. Because it was July 13th, 1988, was my first time on stage. And people realized it was cheap. Bar owners realized it was cheap to produce comedy because all you needed was a stage.
Right.
And then TV producers found out it was cheap. That's when everybody had a comedy show, the half-hour comedy hour, MTV.
That was golden age, man. Yeah.
And it was still on the cusp of an art and commerce, right? So I started doing that, and I was working, and I went out to L.A., and I got a job on a sitcom. I auditioned, and I got the role for this. It was called Flying Blind with Tay Leone and Corey Parker. And Jerry Bonners was the director. Jerry the dentist from the Newhart show.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. I remember him.
Jerry.
And he said, you're really good. And I went, I got to learn this. And Michael Tucci was in it, who was in Grease. And I remember him, and he took me aside. I said, look, I'm a stand-up. He goes, you really should learn. So I got encouraged to do it. Oh, I studied with Stephen Book in California, and I just started working. And Dennis Leary gave me my first dramatic role. So I figured out how to do comedy. And then it's weird because I was doing three camera, which is an audience. So you do the joke,
right.
You get the laugh. Uh-huh. I'm used to that. Single camera in a movie, there's no audience. So my first gig was with Leary, and it was a single camera comedy. And they said, okay, the first scene, cut, thank you, moving on. I'm like, that's it? Where's the reinforcement?
I need the feedback. Right.
Someone needs to love me now. Someone needs to tell me it's okay.
So that was a strange kind of learning experience. But Dennis gave me a lot of opportunity to do drama and to do comedy. And then I got the job with Edie Falco, and that's just skyrocketed because I never played a romantic lead before.
I will never understand why Nurse Jackie was so mean to you.
I think she was on drugs.
Really?
I can't confirm that, Jeannie. I have a suspicion.
You were the greatest. Like, that character was the greatest guy, and she was so awful to
you.
When you went square dancing, remember?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's a scene, where your character is, you're out and you're calling the rodeo or whatever, whatever's going out on the dance floor, and she's in the bathroom with some dude.
Somebody else. Yeah. At the wedding.
Okay, so I'll tell you the story. She's the drug addict, right? I got a third degree AC separation on Top Gear 2 months before that. I flipped over. And I couldn't get the surgery because I had a report for work. So I couldn't get all cut up. So I didn't, I told him, look, so the arm's kind of hanging. I get the script for the first series. Frank takes Jackie square dancing. Of course he does. So she's the drug addict, and
you're getting the shots.
I'm on Vicodin.
Right.
I'm Liz Taylor. I'm just eating them like Tic Tacs, yelling at the band, "Come on, step it up." She was great. And as an actor, you rise to that occasion. I found another gear playing that guy that you didn't know you had. And it's like golf. You gotta keep doing it. You can hit balls on the range as much as you want.
They feed off each other, though, I imagine. Acting and comedy, right? Does comedy give you more from acting or vice versa?
A lot of comics, when I started, and I guess it's true today, don't want to learn acting. Because you think, in our heads, you think you're going to screw up the comedy. Because you really don't know what makes us funny.
Well, some comedians are, performing.
Yeah.
Playing a part. Yeah. I mean, your act is more... I'm not going to pretend to know you. But, your act is pretty much who you are.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's being. It's more like being and telling your story and connecting.
Right.
That's what I get out of it. Because my act, we're talking off the air, I'm a confessional comic. I talk about my life and I talk about what scares me. Because Richard Pryor was one of my favorites. Oh. And when I read Pryor Convictions... He said, "I write what scares me." And I was like, and Mel Brooks, I think Masterclass, said he wrote about Nazis because he was terrified of it. And it kind of takes the fangs out of the monster if you write about it, if you address it in laughter. So I write about the stuff that kind of scares me or I'm worried about because I can fix a joke. Like if I can get on stage and I got to find the truth of it and put it into a form where I can communicate it to somebody else. And then when I hear it, oh, that's what I'm thinking. That's what this is about. Like, I'll start out with something, and it keeps turning. It's like like a painting, like art. If you don't start out, you let it become something that it wants to show you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I use now. I'm using the act for. And when you connect with people, like I wrote about my last special, I wrote about my dad going through chemo. And I wrote a bit about it.
That's hysterical, having done that myself.
It's like, going through it and the effect it has. But when I got the joke right and I got the applause break right and I got the thought right, so many people came back and told me their story, and it was a release valve for them.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever pressure was in them that I had to release for myself, the art form allowed someone else to release it.
Michael and I talked about this last week, and I mean this sincerely. I mean, you have a gift for, you're very funny, obviously. Anyone listen to that?
You're talking to Adam.
Listen to this. No, I'm talking to Adam. I happen to be looking at you.
Okay.
Definitely talking to Adam. Anyone listening to this understands that. And you you are inherently funny, but you do have a gift for sort of bringing. There is like kind of a warmth to your comedy. I don't know if that's the right term for it, but you have like this ability to sort of bring people in, make them care about you, your story. And I think maybe it's because you're sort of sharing. On some level, we feel like you're kind of letting us in.
It comes from, thank you. It comes from a place, like Pryor did that for me, because Pryor, the pathos, when you watch Richard Pryor.
Oh, yeah.
Work,
yeah, it's unbelievable.
And I think it was, and comedy albums were, that was my goal when I was a kid. That's what was under the bed.
Vinyl.
The bomb went off.
Yeah.
It was the vinyl.
Yeah.
It was the George Carlin, it was Richard Pryor, it was the 2,000-year-old man. It was all those albums, and I would listen to them, and then I would cassettes and walk around with them. And those guys had stories to tell. And because it was theater of the mind, you were like just imagining what that was like. And when they were talking about the pain in their life, you're like, all right.
Mm-hmm.
That's just how it was imprinted on me. So that's the kind of stuff I like to do.
Cool.
And by the way, I would recommend to anybody that has not gone back and watched Rescue Me or gone back and watched Nurse Jackie. I mean, Rescue Me is one of the all-time
great
shows.
How great is Leary?
Leary's great. All of you guys are great, though. Yeah. It works because everyone is great. And it was the kind of show people, that hadn't seen it. How do you describe it? It's the kind of show that can make you laugh your ass off one second and then make you cry, like, the next second. I mean, it was just such a powerful show.
That was great. Leary was so good. at the writing of it. And there was a lot of stuff. I'll tell you one story. We blew up Harlem one night. We had a big fire. And I had to come around the corner. And I was in the little Suburban. So I was just, and then the fire truck. And they were real fire trucks. A real fireman that drove it. Nilsy was a real fire guy because he drove the truck. Mm-hmm. You couldn't just get some guy to drive the truck. So there's helicopters.
Well, Michael does have a CDL, right?
You do?
Right.
Not up to date.
You do have a CDL?
I had a CDL, but no air brakes.
Oh, I didn't know you had that. I drove tractor trailers on Top Gear. No, they just put us in the trucks. We don't have a CDL. they pulled us. We got pulled over, and the cop goes, "What are you doing? It's a TV show." All right, go ahead. They didn't care. Wow,
sounds
how'd you
fun.
Get that?
Working at a boarding school is part of my job requirement.
To and work at a boarding school?
Well, yeah, because I had to drive the coach or the teams that I coached. You want to learn how to drive? You try and drive a 16-seat van with screaming kids,
with 20 kids
up and down the Garden State Expressway.
There you go. Yeah, that's fun. Yeah.
I had to drive a logging truck off road up a mountain to get loaded up. I had 116,000 pounds of logs aimed at the back of my head.
Yeah.
And I was driving down this mountain and with 16 forward gears.
Yeah, stop gently.
I'm like, this is it.
Yeah, that's similar to 16-year-old girls, though.
This is it. Yeah, I mean, there was no screaming. It was just in my head. But yeah. Oh, wow, you got a CDL. That's so cool. Yeah.
Adam Ferrara was our special guest today, and he'll be appearing at the DC Improv.
Oh, I have a Lachiserie store. Yes, two shows tonight.
Can you wait for till we get back for news?
Sure,
two shows tonight?
No, I got two shows. Yeah, one show tonight, two shows Saturday, two shows Friday.
He doesn't know. He just shows up.
And we want to hear the Mark Bombing story, too.
Yeah, maybe I'll tell that instead of news.
Tell me the Mark Bombing story.
Yes. All right, so that's all coming up. We'll be right back. This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is one of my favorite artists that we have that we play on the show. This is from Davis Vardaman, son of the great Jack Vardaman. The band is called Old Fuss and Feathers, and the song is called Whiskey River Bend. And I just love these guys. And if you like this song, you can hear it at the end of the show, as we do with all the songs that we play on the show. And if you want to sing us or send us your music, you can do so at TK Jingles. What is it again?
Jingles at TonyKornheiserShow.com. I sort of thought I could get out of that
Dad
not being here.
I know.
If he were here, he would ask you where people could buy stuff.
And yeah,
we're selling stuff, right, Michael?
Yeah, sure. We're moving product, right? I just old fussing stuff.
I can't hear the phone, Michael.
The volume's down, Dad.
He called during the show open.
Of course he did. Of course
I'm sure it was a license plate.
It had to be a license plate.
Or passing Franklin Field in Philadelphia.
That could be it, too. So we may get to some news stories, but I wanted to tell the story of me bombing, and hopefully that will sort of flush it out of my system before I get on stage, because I'm not on stage all that often.
Right.
You know, a couple of times a year. So I agreed. There's a friend of mine named Jared Freed, who's a great comedian. He's up in New York, and he's really funny, and he'd always wanted me to do a show with him, and he's like, hey, I'm going to be down in D.C. Mm-hmm. Why don't you come on? We'll give you a set, you know, like 10 minutes or whatever you want to do. I was like, fantastic. So I went, and I had this whole thing prepared about being a male in his 40s, and I had all these jokes that was going to be interactive with the audience and be like, hey, all right, who's over 40 here, guys? All right, raise your hand. And then I had jokes I was going to build off of that. I walk in, and it was nothing but women. Like, mm-hmm. The whole audience was, it was like some comedy tour that was tailored specifically for like women in their 20s and like early 30s. So like my whole routine was like completely done. I was like, what do I do? I was freaking out. So I'm like backstage with some of the other comedians, and they didn't know me, so they didn't care. They're like, hey, figure it out, man.
Audible.
Right. So I'm like back there, and I'm like recycling through some old material, and I go with it. And this was some of the heavy blue stuff that I originally did.
Right.
But it always killed. So I was like, all right, I'll just go back. I'll play Hotel California. Everybody loves this song. And I went, and it was the worst experience I've ever had in my life. Because time stops. You're standing.
Yeah.
You feel like you're utterly naked on stage, and people want you to be funny. But when they start to realize that it's not working, they drift. And at one point, there was a couple.
And when you've lost them, you've lost them.
You've lost. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, you're not getting them back with
and
a
your
singer.
Brain, my brain, and this is the way it works for me. It's like the plane is crashing, and you're like, okay, hit this button, try this button. It's just you're cycling through so many things, and nothing's working. And you see the ground coming up at you. And for me, the ground hitting me was there was two women at a table, literally right next to the stage, and they just started having a conversation.
Loud enough that you could hear them.
Loud enough that I could hear them. I was like, I'm sorry, am I bothering you guys?
I have to imagine you remember your worst set.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And I talk to you after this, like sometime, because I'm still scarred by this. Like people are like, it was like years ago. And I'm like, You don't forget that. For me, I don't forget that kind of stuff.
Nope.
And you told me that, like, when you would have a bad night, mm-hmm. which I guess everybody has them, but I find it hard to believe that you would because sure. you're so great.
Oh, no, you get them.
But you would, like, you would drive through, like, the toll lane yeah. and tell jokes to the toll person.
Gotta shake it off. Gotta make somebody laugh.
Right.
I was driving home from Connecticut. It was a terrible night. And I was talking to how's your night? Really? And I'm trying to make this lady laugh. Because yeah. I need something.
You just
but
need
I can't
to know you still got
like
it.
This.
Right?
Yeah,
you need
I'm
to
not,
still got it.
I gotta do something. And you got to make somebody laugh. You got to get back up on the horse again. But it's like when that happens to you, you feel like you're just sucked out of the present. It's like when Mr. Slate would yell at Fred Flintstone and he would shrink.
Right. That's, yeah.
You just feel like you're just shrinking.
Yeah. So do you retire the material or do you just chalk it up to, is it easier to blame them?
No, everyone wanted to see, because the first thing people tell you, well, it's a terrible crowd. And I was like, it wasn't a terrible crowd. They mm-hmm. were laughing at everything everybody else was saying. It was just what I was doing that night just didn't work.
You got to know your demographic.
Yeah,
before you
and
go
and I was going really blue stuff, and it was, you know.
Yeah, you can't do that.
Yeah.
But you don't know until you make the mistake.
Exactly. And it's you step on the landmine, you're like, okay, yeah. now I won't.
I got another leg.
Exactly. I'll be okay.
I'll be hopping through life now.
And I was going over, and I never do this. I'm going to pull the curtain back because I never talk to anybody about my jokes because I'm afraid. The few times I tell them, people are like, oh, well, what are you going to do tonight? I'll tell a joke and they'll be like, oh, yeah, that's kind of funny. And you're like, well, thanks for that positive reinforcement. So I asked you, I was like, well, I got this bit that I want to do. And I kind of went through it. And we got into this great, like a master's level discussion about mm-hmm. comedy. And so I'm really going in a different direction with what I'm going to do tonight.
Good.
Is so that
I'm,
right?
Yeah, I'm very excited
Is that
about
right?
it. Good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
Oh.
Yeah. No. Well,
maybe we'll stay at dinner a little longer.
Exactly. Oh, did we miss
yeah,
you?
So, Adam, what time are you coming on?
I'd like to be there, but I'm swimming.
So, yeah. But no, if you talked about it. It's the confessional stuff. You know,
well, it's what you are. It's what can you talk about?
Yeah.
What makes you different? Look, anyone can. Did you ever notice? No, I haven't seen anything. Thank yeah. God you're here to point this out to me.
Yeah. So, and to me, the most powerful moment I've ever seen on stage, and I didn't see it, I saw the film of it, was Pryor mm-hmm. when he does the match. You know, it's like, what's this?
I lit myself on fire.
And you're like, that's the bravest thing yeah. I think you could ever do to make fun of like that horrible incident. And that's why Richard Pryor was a genius. So, mm-hmm. So I'm not saying I'm going to be Pryor tonight, but I'm excited. For this, and
it's all true. That's the thing for me, and I don't. I hope you experience it. It's all truth because that you can't lie up there,
right?
Your inauthenticity, they smell.
Oh
it.
Yeah,
you know, and you can't. So in a live performance, you have to be as authentic as you can in the moment.
Now, Mark, has it ever occurred to you that perhaps Adam invites you to open for him when he's here because it makes him, by comparison, appear much funnier?
That's right.
We've explained that. We talked about that.
And I only say that because I know a little piece of it will stay with you forever and cause you to question yourself.
Oh, trust me. The moment before, like when they introduce you, and by the way, I'm weird too because like everybody else hangs out in the green room.
I walk away
yeah. and I just, there's like this little area right off stage and I'm just sitting there for like 15 minutes yeah. being like.
It's a solid, anytime you got to do it, you got to be, you know, by yourself.
Stuart no Smalley what. Affirmations.
Yeah. Yeah. And trust me, the one thing I'll remember tonight is that comment from you.
I hope so. Well, I'll be yelling it at you if I'm stupid enough to show up for your bit.
Yeah, so I think the show starts at 7:30,
yeah.
and then it'll probably hold a little bit for the house, but you know, be like 7:40, 7:45 when I'll be up there, something yeah. like that.
Which,
so.
Jeannie, that's high tide.
If right.
You want to ride away,
get out of there, Jeannie.
The seas will just take me
that's
in and then maybe
it.
Take me back
that's
out.
It.
And again, yeah. and I've seen, and I know this sounds like I'm just blowing smoke, but I've seen you now on stage 100 times,
yeah.
and it's always good. Even stuff like, and this is the weirdest thing for me, because being a radio guy, like, you do a joke, and then you never do it again. It's like you leave it behind. But with comedy, you're like, no, that's...
Yeah,
you,
but you're
you
moving
home.
Around.
It evolves,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
right?
It
evolves.
A different thing.
Yeah.
yeah, it becomes a different thing, and it becomes about a different thing.
But I've
you
got
to keep doing different stuff. So that's why I keep doing different
Now, do you
stuff.
Involve the audience at all?
Yeah, like, I'm... Look, my ADD is raging. Right now, it's raging.
We counted on that. In
yeah,
fact...
Yeah. We started a story somewhere, and I went, you have a CDL, Michael?
Right. You were very impressed by that.
Bootsy has more of a focus than I do. My life is a mobile in a crib. So it's like something will happen and I'll make a left turn and go back. And sometimes I never get to the stuff I've written. So it's just, but it's the willingness, for me, it's the willingness to be, this is what's going to happen between mm-hmm. me and you.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
just take that.
And that's those are fun moments. To me, the when audience members, you have some kind of back and forth with them, that's like found money for me up there. Because you're like, because that wasn't something I planned on. Uh-huh. But I'm almost better at sort of like an off-the-cuff riff with somebody in front of me. So I love that. And you're brilliant at that.
I have to tell this one story. I can't say the name of the club because I don't want to give, but it happened on the road that I was working. This one guy was really drunk. I was working as one guy, and the other drunk guy wanted to be part of it, you know,
you know, like maybe he was the middle. He was Jan Brady.
Marsha, Marsha, Marsha.
So, and he was really drunk. It was a late show Friday, and they had to escort this guy out. And on the way out, I hear him. I go, what did I do? Hey, man. Chase the rain! I swear, on the way out of the club. And I went, ah, I don't get that. Gary Sands gets all these people, he's coming, and right. Howard Fineman gets the Secret Service. I get a drunk guy.
Yeah, there you go. It's amazing, though. Everywhere so you go. I think I was telling you this. I was driving down the street the other day, and I have a TK sticker on the back of the car, and a guy starts honking at me, and I was like, what did I do? Right. And I'm the worst road rage guy in the world, mm-hmm. so I'm ready to get out of the car with a baseball bat. And the guy pulls up to me, and he gives me the TK salute. And then I'm like, what is going on? He immediately pulls up a TK sticker and gives me the thumbs up.
Yeah, well, it wasn't the TK salute at first. At first, he's just giving you the finger. Yeah.
That was probably
it. Until he shared the sticker that you realized it was the friendly salute.
Yeah, so, but anyways, I am excited for tonight.
Yeah, we'll have some fun.
It's going to be great fun. And there's the improv is such a cool place to be.
Yeah.
Is that, like, you played everywhere. What's the coolest place you've ever played?
That was, well, the clubs, DC Improv and Chicago Improv, two of my favorites. Helium in Philly is one of my favorites. I played the Greek Theater.
Oh, wow.
I opened for Lionel Richie at the Greek Theater.
Wow.
I played Carnegie Hall. Me and Leary did Carnegie Hall. Yeah,
that's
I did Radio
cool.
City. So I did Radio City, Carnegie Hall. I did, and I did the Ed Sullivan Theater when I did Letterman. But so I'm doing Radio City. We're doing the tour. And I told my parents. I said, well, my father was alive then. I was Pop, I'm playing Radio City. Yeah, kid, your mother told me. You're also doing the Mohegan Sun, the casino. We want to go to that. Radio, yeah, it's fine. We want to go to that. That's
picture.
The one we want to go to.
They got the
all
slots.
Right. Yeah, okay, fine. I'm going to be there. You know, unless I get on a rush. But I'm going to be there.
Oh, it's funny.
Yeah. It's great. It's great. It's going to be a fun show. So I hope everybody can come out and come out all weekend. Come out
I want to ask you, if I can, I want to ask Jeannie how you met Mr. Tony.
Yeah.
I know you were the editor.
Yes, well... Tony and I both.
Oh, wait a minute. Hold on. Did I jump? The ADD's jumping.
That's okay. No, I know. That's a great question. And I know we want to talk about that.
Right.
This is a perfect place to break because
the
only news stories I have, essentially, and Michael, you sent this to me, and I love that you sent this to me as a new parent about some parent making their kid brush their teeth with feces, like cat feces.
I sent that to you.
You sent that to
me? Yeah, made their kids eat and brush their teeth with cat feces.
Because they had failed to clean up the cat poop, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's good.
Parenting 101, we call that.
Social services.
I think they're involved.
Lessons from the Braun household.
But our lead story is Mark Stern opening for Adam Ferrara tonight at the DC Improv.
Yeah, that is the lead for everybody.
And I'll be there. Come buy me a beer.
Yeah, exactly.
But put it on my tab because there's a 2-drink minimum. So
you thought that was funny, Stern? Brush your teeth.
Yeah.
I don't care if it smells.
All right, funny man. There you go. Yeah. So we'll come back because I want to hear this story too because I don't think we've ever really talked about that. And it's Old Guy Radio, and there is a good song I want to play today with historical meaning. So that's all coming up next.
Perfect.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Son of a gun. Love the whisper from Carly Simon. This is Carly Simon's "You're So Vain," which was released on this day in 1973. Jeannie has a fact about the song that I was unaware of.
Yeah, Mick Jagger sings backup vocals. You don't hear him come
in
until the very end. Yeah, it's very distinctive, actually.
So the song is not about him, but he's in the song.
Allegedly, right?
Yes. Well, so the legend about the song is that it's a combination of three different men in Carly Simon's life, one of whom is Warren Beatty. And as she jokes, she's like, yeah, he probably thinks the whole song's about him.
Right.
That makes sense.
Yeah, so, but it's never been revealed publicly who the other two are. Although she's told Howard Stern and a couple of other people. I think she auctioned it off, and I forget who won the auction.
Tim Russert. Or no, not Tim Russert, the head of NBC.
Yeah, it was somebody from NBC.
Yeah.
And by the way, the opening bass little.
Oh, auctioned off what?
Like
her explanation?
Who it was,
okay.
Yeah. So, with the you know, you can't tell anybody. Yeah, you can't tell anybody. But the bassist...
Yeah, that helps. Listen, I'd lie to, but Carly says.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a 50-50 raffle, and I'm a man of honor.
So I won't say. But the bassist in that, I love this story, the bassist in that, in this song, is Klaus Voormann, who was a buddy of... He met the Beatles in Hamburg when they were... You know, before they blew up, and he was friends with Astrid Kirshner, and he ended up becoming a musician in his own right. Played with Lennon, I think, on one of Lennon's solo albums, and played with a bunch of people.
He was in a Plastic Ono band, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. And I just love that the direction his life took after meeting those guys is just astonishing because he wasn't a musician when he met them, and he just picked it up and sort of became a pretty good player.
According to People magazine, by the way, an interview they did with Carly Simon, and it looks like 2015, she confirmed that, in fact, the second verse is Warren.
The second verse is, yes. Yeah. So but there's three men.
Right.
It's like a combination of the three.
Well, one could be Mick Jagger.
One could be.
Yeah.
One could be. And I had no idea that he sang on that.
Yeah, yeah.
I love that, you know, it does. I mean, I guess people still do it, but I love, like, you know, Bowie singing on Pressure with Queen.
Yeah.
You know, there's just all kinds of great collaborations back in the day. But anyway. So
Millie working with Vanilli.
Millie and Vanilli. Yeah, that was always a classic one. So the story of the origin story of you and Anthony Irwin Kornheiser.
Okay. So this isn't anything I would say this story to his face, of course.
That means it's going to be a good one. Yeah. When you preface anything by that, you know it's going to be good.
So we both started at the Washington Post in 1979.
Okay, wait. So were you working there first, or was he?
No, we're almost exact same time.
Okay, so he came down from New York. We know he drove.
Right.
She swam.
That's right.
She swam.
She swam from Kansas.
Right.
I just totally came to the Post through the back door. They had had a successful lawsuit filed against them for discriminating against women, so they were eager to have women.
Right.
And I started on the news desk working in the composing room, which was like a factory. The paper was put out in hot type, linotype, monotype presses. I came home. I literally was an ink-stained wretch every night. I mean, I started wearing black then. I still do because I was covered with ink. But shortly after that, I moved up to the editorial page, so I was on the same floor of the newsroom.
Okay.
And at that time, there was this group of young, then young people. Me and Tony are the same age. And we all sort of got to know each other. And Tony was working in style and in sports then. But we were all sort of out in the newsroom, you know,
fooling
around.
Big open space.
Yeah, and we'd all go out for dinner after work and stuff like that. And so Tony is sort of like, you know, a beagle that just kind of bites into your shin if he thinks you can, like, give him something, you know, to help him, you know, with his column or his feature story, whatever he was writing at the time. And we used to keep a list. Like, Tony would come barging into the newsroom and go, give me the names of blind people who sang the national anthem, but not Jose Feliciano. Somebody else. And we were like, okay. So then you'd have to, like, kind of feed him stuff.
You were his Google.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So then I moved to the style section. I helped edit his column in the style section, but it sort of would get, the beagle was in my shin, and he would sort of drive me over to the sports section, and then the beagle would come back to style and sink his teeth into my shin. And so we began to be good friends. And then the woman who was the deputy sports editor left, and so Tony said to George, you ought to hire Gene over here in sports. And by then, I'd gotten to know everybody in sports because the beagle had dragged me over to sports.
Sure,
So then the beagle had dragged me back to style. So I became his editor then. I mean, and we were friends by then. But I will say this, the better the writer, and Tony is a great writer, the more open they are to editing. I have found that to be universally true. It was the young, insecure reporters and writers who did not take to edit. But Tony was always...
So he was easy, or not necessarily easy to edit, although he may have been that too, but he was very receptive to editing.
He took a lot up front to gin him up,
okay,
to figure out what it was that he should be writing.
So there weren't that many changes because he wasn't locked into an idea that was just solely his that you were messing with. It was a kind of a collective way to go. That's cool.
Absolutely. And so we had some great adventures together. Most notably, we went to Lillehammer together. And
I heard about the jacket.
Still have the jacket.
Right,
jacket.
In Minnesota for the Super Bowl.
And the Super Bowl 26 in 1992.
Well, the whole bandwagon year was like that. That's like just legendary for you
and
guys.
And that was one of those collected columns every week. Like just everybody was just throwing ink onto the truck there. But Tony pulled it together beautifully. And that is, he laughs about it now, but he says that's when I started yodeling. That's when he sort of stopped tackling often serious topics and just...
What was the biggest change, like, when you first met? Was he orange when you first met him?
He was orange.
Hair. He had hair, right? Yeah. Probably a hair.
Yeah, he kind of like pictures. A fro back then, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, Michael, you met him.
He didn't have the beard.
Young.
He didn't have the beard till Lillehammer, right?
Right.
I don't remember.
Yeah, I think he just had
just the stash.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
Because I remember he came back from the Olympics, and I said, who's this guy?
Right.
Because I always joked that he would go to the Olympics what felt like every 6 months. He was making up events to go to, and he'd be gone for months at a time. So he was gone for the entire early 90s.
We had a lot of fun in Lillehammer. The best thing about it was we were 6 hours ahead of people back home. Mm-hmm. So we planned.
You were in the future.
We were in the future. And we would plan what we were going to do, and I'd dispatch everybody to go up this mountain or down that mountain. And by the time the people in sports came in, I'm sorry, like it was already done. Like, no, we don't try to mess with us. This is what we're doing today. So it was great. It was,
wow.
But we really are good friends. We really have shared a lot.
Well, yeah. The columns that he came up with, I mean, you were such an integral part of him. What was, I can't believe I'm forgetting this, but he would call you, what was the name?
Well, he'd say, call me my dear friend Nancy, because my mother was still alive. My sainted mother was still alive at the time. And some of the things that I would say that got into that column
you'd feel like I don't
were not
mom.
Things I wanted my mother to know about.
Right. Ah.
So.
My dear friend Nancy.
My dear friend Nancy, yes.
Did you read the paper? Nancy toured with the Stones.
Well, yeah, but the partnership that you guys had was, I mean, and that was such a golden age for that paper. It really was, and not taking anything away from all the great writers that are there now, because I love all of them. But it was
name three. No, I'm just kidding.
Perry Smoot, Liz Clark, Ann Hornaday.
Right.
But what you guys were doing back then, it was. I mean, you guys were planting a flag at the top of the mountain every single day.
Well, we had a great,
only game in town.
We had too, a great boss in George Solomon.
Yep. Great eye for talent.
That really helped too.
Great eye. Yeah. I mean,
was he like a newspaper guy? Like,
totally.
Like yelling,
Parker, I need pictures of the Spider-Man guy.
Absolutely. George was terrible word editor, but he had this sixth sense for news. I would come in some day and I'd say, George, we got nothing. And then I'd say, well, yeah, I'm going to go home early. I'm going to meet my girlfriends for dinner. By 4 o'clock, George would come out with a story like, we're going to get a baseball team here in D.C. Well, he milked that one for about 10 years before we finally did get a baseball team in D.C. But he'd have us working at 7 o'clock.
He was right. He was just slow.
Yeah, exactly. He'd get some little wisp of news, but he could blow that thing up.
It's like Nostradamus. It takes a while.
Right. But eventually.
Right. Well, eventually he's there.
Yeah, that right.
Is this a column or a quatrain? Just write it.
Well, that's good stuff.
Did you ever fight about anything? Did you ever disagree?
Yeah. Yeah, we had one really big fight. It was about 3 days before we were supposed to leave for Lillehammer.
Mm-hmm.
And I came into his office for something. Actually, it was our office, which we were supposed to share, but Tony didn't like people in his office. But anyway, I came into our office, and he said, I got something. I have something I have to tell you. I'm not going to Lillehammer. And I picked up something on the desk, and I said, you know what? And I threw it at him.
Uh-huh.
Because not only was he not going to Lillehammer, mm-hmm. and it would have been fun, and I needed him, you know, to write columns,
sure.
but somebody in style was going to take his credential.
That you didn't want to be with.
That I did not want to be with, because this person didn't like to write on deadline.
Oh.
I like to think about it for about 48 hours. Uh-huh. And then, well,
they worked at a newspaper.
They worked
How could they
newspaper?
Not like a deadline?
And when you're working in sports, you write three stories a night. You write the first story, you write a sidebar, and then you do a sub out of everything.
And then you throw them both away because something changed.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. So this little prima donna was going to take that credential.
Uh-huh.
So
you're still not over it. Look at you.
Well, she fixed it. Obviously, you fixed it.
I think throwing something at him got his attention. I probably was.
Why was he not going to go?
He didn't want to fly.
Yeah, didn't want to fly.
He didn't want to fly.
And he didn't have the
How do you think he was going to get there?
No talismans and amulets.
Yeah, but that's his move. I mean, that's his move, his tip, like panic at the last minute. You know that, Michael.
There's a 2-week cycle to his flying schedule.
Right.
He's okay a month out. 2 weeks out, he starts calling everybody he knows, including his pilots.
Right. Ask for prayers.
And then 2 to 3 days in advance, he says, I'm just not going to go. Have fun without me. You go.
Right.
And then the day before, that's when he doesn't eat, doesn't sleep. Everyone's on red alert. That's when he needs your prayers.
Right.
I would say it's roughly analogous to the situation now many of us have as we start in the coming weeks to get invited to holiday parties.
Yeah.
Like, I'll be invited to a lot of holiday parties in town. And I think, man, that looks like fun. It seems like a great idea. You know, six to eight on a Wednesday.
Right. Yeah.
And I live at that time of day. I live an hour plus outside of town.
Yeah.
And I might not be in town that day and think, oh, do I want, you know, so... I can sort of get that. I mean, Nigel, you or, I'm sorry, Mark, I'm used to Nigel sitting there. You are famous for
committing to something and then
bowing
out.
And then like as it approaches, man, like that was such a bad idea. I don't want to do that.
Surgery?
Social commitments. I'll be like,
he's 50-50 on the show tonight. You might get a late call.
Oh yeah, there's a good chance to be like, you know what? Nah, you have fun. I'll be back.
Well, you know what though? I have to say I've gotten to a point in my life.
Can't get over what Gary said.
I'm not coming to the show. I really want to come to the show, but now I've gotten so much better about just saying
I'm gonna pick some up and throw
it. No.
That's a tremendous talent. To be able to just know your limitations and say
not offering an excuse.
Just say no.
It's much easier.
But tomorrow, tomorrow or Saturday,
now.
Maybe.
No, you say that now. When I asked you before, you just wanted to ask. You went fair. I'm like, okay.
Well, that's good. So he did he back off right then when you threw?
Yes,
whatever
he did.
So he said, okay, fine,
yes,
I'll go.
Yes, he did.
Did you throw it at his head?
Yeah, I threw it at his head.
Oh, okay.
I was standing, he was sitting down. It was either a book or it might have been an ashtray, although I don't know.
Oh, my God. I could have done some damage.
Ashtrays.
No, I did. I threw it at him.
Wow. That is great.
And the flying's always been there. It's nothing that developed.
It's gotten worse. Has it gotten worse over the years?
It's gotten worse because he has more control over his schedule. So back at that point, he was still being told to fly over there.
That was a professional obligation.
He's got money. Before, he's like, you know, I got to feed the
but
kids,
but his
go.
Flying now is largely elective.
Yeah. Yes.
Right? I mean,
a lot of it.
Yes. But no, he also has different, like, the fact that these executives at these airlines are willing to meet him outside and basically hold his hand through security. Yeah, I don't know why they do this. And then he gets their phone number and he says, this is a mistake. I will call you up all the time. And he follows through.
Yes. Man of his word.
But it's always been that way. It's not like it's
always been there.
I will say, I've flown with him just, we were on the same flight once. I think it was when we went to Phoenix. And now I think he'd probably been medicated, but he seemed very happy. Like I was expecting a guy like crying and like, you know, trying to drag him onto the plane. But he was
Charles Grodin in the Night Run.
Yeah, exactly. All the big ones go down.
Getting out in Oslo for the Olympics. It was like I was leading a sedated horse by the reins.
Mr. T.
Off the
ramp.
The
A-team, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly, Gabe.
Hit him in the throat with a dart.
Does he know where the fear comes from? Does he know the root of it, or he just doesn't
nap? I think a lot of it's just upbringing.
Probably dying. Yeah. It's probably a fear of dying, I would guess.
Upbringing?
No, he did not grow up.
Raised by birds?
He didn't grow up flying. So I think, you know, I look at my generation. I was fine flying as a kid.
Right.
He's gotten to me. I'm worse at flying now. But I just think it was something he could avoid until he had this. You know, he was that young.
But if he avoided it, he wouldn't know he had a fear of it until, oh, wait a minute, this isn't right, you know.
Well, a lot of people don't know this about Tony. He was in Clear Lake, Iowa, and was going to get on the plane.
Buddy Holly?
I'm going to do the bus. Buddy, you guys go. Yeah, Richie, you take my seat.
And
never sang
again. Do you find
again.
That you get less, like, I definitely am more uncomfortable flying the older I get.
Now, I'm annoyed more.
Yeah.
I'm just annoyed because it's not like it used to be.
Like a little bit of turbulence now, and I get, like, it used to not bother me at all.
I have the Jean-Paul Sartre approach to flight. Hell is other people.
Yeah.
And they're in my cabin.
Okay. Yeah.
That's what.
I'm with you. The turbulence doesn't bother me. It's all that stuff.
No, I'm with you when you're up.
Sitting next to this guy.
When you're up there, though, because I'm already annoyed at all the people with the shoes off and the dogs and all that. But then when you get that, you know, Heavy, you know, and the pilot comes on and the seatbelt lights go on. The only thing that will really put me over the top is the brace.
I mean, no one wants to hear that.
Flying with a baby has oddly made it easier for me because I just
distracted?
Don't. Distracted? Yeah, I'm a little distracted, but it also just makes me, it allows me to get even with all the people bothering me. So we went through the TSA security check with the snap-off stroller. It got stuck. We shut down security checkout lane.
Awesome.
People are yelling, and I'm just sitting
Power
there saying,
of the boot
sorry.
Seat.
Sorry, he's a baby. What do you expect? Right.
Oh, I look around when I see the babies, and I try to look at their tickets. I'm like, oh, no.
Yeah. You see
they're an extra leg. Oh, God.
Yeah, and they're not. They don't enjoy the
flyer. Well, Bootsy doesn't need a seat yet.
Is Bootsy a good flyer?
He's been a good flyer so far. We've been very lucky.
It's good.
But no, the big thing now is you have to check and say, is there a seat available? Because then you can bring the car seat on and put it next to you.
Oh, nice.
Never is there a seat available.
No, not these days.
They're going to tell you there is? Are you crazy? Yeah.
So you just put him up on your shoulder and hope he throws up on somebody.
Yeah. Great. He's a parrot that looks like me.
Well, this has been great. Thank you, everyone, for coming in. You guys are the best. Adam, thank you for...
Good to see you, my friend. Thank you for having me.
It's going to be great fun again at the DC Improv tonight. Thursday, November 2nd through Saturday. Two shows Friday, two shows Saturday. I'll be there as well tonight and Saturday, but I'm not the reason to go to the show. Adam is the reason to go to the show. So, everyone, thank you for coming in.
There's a read I have to read here. Sorry. It's,
why are you apologizing? You haven't screwed it up yet.
I know. Well, we'll reset the board, Nigel's board, back to zero.
Okay.
I'd like to thank our sponsor today, Home Depot. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the Tony Kornheiser Show wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Play. And if you listen to this show through iTunes, please leave us a review. It does help us out. I know Tony is not here to say it, so I'll say it for him. If you are out on your bike tonight, please wear white.
I'm going to solve.
All right.
Corno Curl Cabinet.
never mind.